Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the entire world. Who knows that the only thing better than a ground ball pitcher, Jordan, is a groundhog pitcher.
That's wow. There you go. Timely, perhaps. What is the groundhog situation at the moment? Are we getting extra winter? When does that even happen? I forget.
Let me just text my guy, Fuxitani Phil. Left his burrow for his annual prediction. Let's see. Phil's inner circle, thousands came out. It doesn't even say what he did.
Oh, well, that's disappointing. Well, I'm glad that it doesn't matter what season it is because we're going to be
Oh, no. 6 more weeks of winter away.
Oh, God. That's, man, really, dude? You know what? It doesn't matter. This isn't going to impact our ability to podcast. We will continue on and talk about baseball as we will here on this here episode. It is February. The baseball season is rapidly approaching. And on this episode of Baseball Barbacast, Jake and I are going to talk about prospects. This is something that we really have not done too much, specific discussion on. Usually, you know, we're maybe talking about one that shows up in a trade or has come up and maybe, you know, the Jeremy Payne's of the world. But like in general, we haven't had the opportunity to talk about prospects. But early, you know, February is really when all the prospect lists start to come out. And so we wanted to take some time to kind of talk about just like the process of evaluating prospects. And to really hammer home this special episode, we actually are going to have one of the best prospects in baseball join us a little bit later on. That's Grayson Rodriguez, pitching prospect for the Baltimore Orioles, for your Baltimore Orioles. Yes, you, Jake. So that was a super wonderful conversation. I think you guys will enjoy that. But before we get to Grayson, we do want to talk about some other prospects and just where we're at with prospect evaluation and what we love about it and what we find funny about it and just why it is so important to us as baseball fans. So where would you like to begin?
Let's start with the fact that prospect evaluation and prospect lists more vaguely are our origin story, Jordan, as a friendship, mm-hmm. really more than even as an, you know, baseball content machine or mistake. We became friends because the other person was the only other person we knew who knew about Jerks and Profar when we were 16 years old, and Jerks and Profar was 17 years old, right? And like that was really important to getting us interested in the game. And so it will always have a special place in our hearts. And I would say that as we've gotten older, I have grown to find it very sillier than I did when I was younger. And you, whether or not you have found it sillier, you have been sucked in even deeper into the world of prospect lists to the point that Jordan has multiple spreadsheets where he tracks all of the prospect lists and the differences between them just for internal use. It's just for him.
Yeah. Well, but I think that that's a good place to start, because if you think about what prospect evaluation is now and prospect discourse, especially now that we have Twitter and we have fans who are very passionate about their own team's prospects and know more about them than ever before, the reality is that multiple outlets put out lists every spring or every preseason, whatever, right? And it's common to see everyone be like, oh my God, this guy, you have him way too high. Oh my God, my favorite prospect is way too low. And that's the stuff I find silly, because it's like, they're still on your team. If you love them so much, then like, that's fine. They still get to be on your team. And if you believe in them and they're going to be great for your team, then who gives a shit what Baseball America says about them? It doesn't matter. I don't know why everyone takes that part so personally.
People just love rankings. People like shit in order, right? People like a 1 to 100. Why are we ranking 100 prospects? It doesn't make any sense. Why 100, right? There aren't only 100 good prospects. And there aren't necessarily enough prospects to fulfill a list sometimes even. And so I find it very funny because it has no real impact over wins and losses in the long run. But yet we are spending time here on this podcast talking about it. And what I do enjoy about it and what I find revealing is that it is a decent facsimile to what happens internally in MLB organizations. Every MLB organization has some sort of list that looks something like this, right?
Yeah.
Where they are ranking every prospect in baseball for their own purposes. And this list is like an amalgamation of what all these different organizations believe. And I think that's what's important to remember as a fan when you scroll through these lists is like, these lists are all different from one another in a lot of ways. And they are all different from the lists that teams have internally, which are all different from one another internally, right? And like all 30 MLB teams disagree probably a lot on certain players, and then they agree on certain players. And so no one list is right, whether that's a team, unless it's like, you know, Tampa's list, this is probably right.
Some lists are probably more right than others, as we've seen by the ones and the kinds of players that they acquire and turn into good big leaguers. But for me, what's interesting, and I think what, the way you just laid it out is a great way to put it, because I love it because one, it's so freaking difficult to figure out and to be consistently right about prospects. And two, it's not that I think it's ridiculous when people want to go into their to different prospect sites chats and be like, oh, this is egregious. How could you rank that? Like, I don't know why you care to take it so personally. At the same time, the reason why I track all these things and keep these lists and put the list next to each other is because I am interested in the discrepancies. I am interested in the outliers when one player only shows up on one list, or when one player shows up in the 30s on two lists and in the 80s on two lists. And those are interesting because that sparks discussion, that sparks debate that is healthy for kind of understanding baseball players, right? And that is a good thing. And those players are usually more interesting when they are divisive. Someone's going to be right and someone's going to be wrong, and that's fine. But those players are usually the ones that are most interesting to talk about. We don't have to get mad about it, but those are interesting.
And I think a good example and a good entryway into talking about specific players is Anthony Volpe, who, you know, is 14th in baseball on the Baseball America list and third on Kylie McDaniel's list at ESPN. And that is a really good example because it's clear that Kylie McDaniel at ESPN believes that Anthony Volpe can play shortstop, and Baseball America has a little bit more skepticism about his value and his ability to play shortstop. And that's the difference, probably. I haven't read BA's entire report yet, but that's the difference between a ranking at number 3 and a ranking at number 14, right? And if you look at Jordan Walker, who Baseball Prospectus has at number 2 and Kylie has at number 14, there's probably a difference of opinion in one specific aspect of his skill set. And as a fan, if you want to be a very engaged, nerdy fan like we do, looking at the discrepancy between those two numbers and trying to figure out why that exists is a really good way and a good cheat code to learn about baseball, because it is where experts disagree, right? And I find that to be a very interesting gray area.
Yeah. And another part of prospect evaluation that I think is sometimes drives me crazy, but everybody wants it, right? Is comps. All people just want to know, oh, who is this guy like?
Yeah. Comparisons, yeah. Not computers.
Not computers. Not because there's a lot of other.
Comp USA.
Comp, yes, exactly. Comparison, right? So people want to know, oh, is this guy like Bryce Harper? Is this guy like Corey Seager? Is this guy like... And I understand that. And I think that those can be helpful from the standpoint of just like starting to visualize what type of player that is, what level of production that is, right? At the same time, one of the great things about prospects that why I never get tired of it and why I've also gotten into draft stuff is that we are still getting unique versions of players every year. And that is so freaking cool, right? Like the fact that we now, I can look at this top list and see a 6'9" right-hander in Yuri Perez who has, you know, more, you know, fluidity than any teenage pitcher we've basically ever seen. But then I can also look and see, you know, a Kyle Harrison type who is throwing in this goofy low slot lefty way that is like formerly would never be considered what you would want to see from a top prospect. And yet he is a top, you know, 30 guy because he's striking so many guys out for reasons that we wouldn't have understood even 10 years ago because of pitcher development. There's so many different kinds of players that we're still getting. And that's why, yeah, I get why we want to be like, who's he going to be like? Like, I want to put it in MLB terms. These are all different players, and I just want to embrace that. Like, Tamar Johnson, like, what the hell is he? Like, I love that I don't know what the hell Tamar Johnson is because we haven't really seen someone with that specific skill set, and that's what makes it more fun and more exciting to see how these guys develop.
Let's hop into some of the lists, Jordan, and talk about some of the prospects that tickle our giblets a little bit more than some of the others. And, you know, as the resident prospect expert here on Baseball Barbercast, I'm going to let you lead us off. Who is someone on these top 100 lists who, whenever you open a new top 100 list, you control F their name.
Yeah. So I think we should start with Jackson Chourio, actually, with the Brewers, because he is one that for other people that like to open top 100 prospect lists, that if you reround a year ago, I think 95% of people had never heard of. And I don't think you could really say that about basically anybody else in the top 20, maybe even top 30, 40 of the prospect list that you're looking at today. And by the way, just for clarification's sake and for what we're referencing, you know, we're choosing to do this now. There's still some other lists that are going to come out. FanGraphs, I know Prospects Live still hasn't done their top 100. So, but the five main lists that we're really working off of are MLB Pipeline, Kyler McDaniel at ESPN, Baseball Prospectus, Keith Law, and Baseball America. So I just want to put that out there. But Jackson Chourio, outfield prospect for the Brewers, one of the youngest players on this entire list. He's only about to turn 19 in March, and he already reached AA last year. Now, he was a guy who signed for decent money out of Venezuela, but normally these are the kind of prospects that take a while. These are the ones that they go to the DSL and they do pretty well, and then they go to, you know, Complex League, and you start hearing whispers about them, like, oh, wow, like this guy looked really good on the backfields, and these scouts are saying this guy could really be on a top 100 list in a couple years, like keep an eye on him. Instead, he just skipped all that and just absolutely torched A-ball and got to AA and is now presumably going to be starting in AA as a barely 19-year-old, basically still almost the age of a high schooler. And this is so stunning, and I know we've had some examples of players like this who've rocketed through the minors like Julio and like Acuna and like Vlad, but this one has come out of nowhere in a way that is just so stunning that it's leaving some people to be like, is this real? Like, can we really believe that this guy is this good this fast? And others to be like, hold on, like there's some red flags here with how much he's swinging and missing in the zone. But like, I don't know, man. I know you're a little skeptical, but listen, we're not experts more than the people who are doing this, you know, for a living, just prospects for a living. But I'm fascinated by his profile and his trajectory.
I will talk about Cardinals shortstop prospect Mason Winn, who, you know, I have been enamored with for some time. For those of you who are not deep into the prospect world, you recognize that name because he threw a baseball 100 miles an hour across the infield at the Futures game. And which is even more interesting because Mason Winn is shorter than both of us. We know this because we have stood next to Mason Winn. He is not short. Like I'm 5'10 and 3/4 and Jordan is 5'11 and 1/4, right? But like Mason Winn is like 5'9, right? And he has a chance to be one of the more unique players that we've seen. And a guy who I would call a bit of a throwback player where the power is not going to jump out at you or do anything crazy. He's going to put the ball in play and he's going to let his legs do the work. Now, there's obviously some concern about his ability to make enough contact to let his legs work. But this is a guy with top of the line speed, like an 80 grade arm. And just a really interesting type of player that we haven't seen a lot of.
The next guy I wanted to mention is not one that I would ever expect to be excited about or one that like would jump off the page, but I think might be the sign of something that I am now going to be watching very closely over the next year or so. And that's Jordan Wicks, who only appears on Kylie's list at 51. And Jordan Wicks was a first-round pick by the Cubs in 2021, a very kind of generic college lefty, great changeup, wasn't throwing that hard. And when they picked him 21st, it was like, all right, great, like probable big leaguer. I'm not really that excited about Jordan Wicks, right? Like, okay, why am I getting excited about Jordan Wicks? And then I remembered who the Cubs have now as their general manager in Carter Hawkins, who came over from the Cleveland pitching machine. And then I see that Jordan Wicks in his first major league season added 3 ticks of velocity and struck out 121 guys in 94 innings and was throwing harder than he ever had before, more consistently. And all the stuff was playing up and was still going with a good changeup. And it made me think, now listen, I'm not saying that Carter Hawkins, just as soon as he got hired by the Cubs, went over to Jordan Wicks and whispered him the secret of adding velocity. But when you see how consistently Cleveland has done it, and you think about how much of an impact that's made on that organization and so many of their prospects, many of which are on these lists, the Tanner Bibees, the Logan Allens, Gavin Williams, and I mean, you know, Spino was throwing hard since he was like 14. But, you know, there are so many of these guys. And if Hawkins can bring some level of that magic to a Cubs organization that has been desperate for that kind of impact pitching, and even if he's doing it to a first rounder like Jordan Wicks, That is a scary proposition, right? If these, and again, you've seen these player development kind of behemoths happen very fast. We've seen it in Baltimore with the hitters. Of course, we've seen it with the Dodgers for a long time. We started to see it with Seattle with the pitchers, the ways that they've developed guys. That's the other key to all of this discussion, right? Is player development, the systems that these teams are in. And that can inform so much about how much you want to believe in certain prospects over others. That's another really interesting part of this.
But it's a great point, and why this type of stuff actually is important from an organizational standpoint. Like, the Cubs had to trade away all the guys from that 2016 team in part because they couldn't develop themselves a pitcher, right? That entire stretch, there was no homegrown arms, and that was why that roster was flawed and they had to trade guys away. And so if that's something that they're going to be able to do now, it is certainly interesting. I'll do one or two more guys, Jordan. This is an obvious one, but Ellie De La Cruz, a 6'5 shortstop for the Cincinnati Reds. I love this because we had O'Neill Cruz a couple years ago on prospect list, and he debuted this past season in Pittsburgh. And the narrative around Cruz was, we have never seen anything remotely like this ever. And it was true, right? And then he gets to the big leagues, and then we look down at the prospect list, and there's another guy,
Cruz,
who is named Cruz, who is a 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", Dominican shortstop, okay, with swing and miss issues and prodigious power, who actually has a chance to stay at the position. Now, De La Cruz is a little bit shorter and doesn't have, I mean, he has the same level of swing and miss, maybe, but like Cruz, like O'Neill's at like a different level now in the big leagues. Like, his swing and miss in the big leagues is the same.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
Ellie might have the same thing. But like, we've gotten two now of this very unique unicorn prospect, both named Cruz, in like the span of 5 years.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. And he is certainly one that has captured a lot of people's attention. And I would say it is also one of the great things about prospects is that, unlike, like, once they get to the big leagues, and I know some people still kind of, O'Neill Cruz is a great test of this because he was doing it on a bad Pirates team last year and everyone was paying attention. But prospects, no one cares what org you're in as far as people getting obsessed with prospects. Like, he's on the Reds and people are still like losing their mind over him. Sure, of course, if he was on the Yankees, it'd be tenfold, right? And that's what we have with the Jason Dominguez type, who's another interesting one. I'm fascinated by Ellie also, partially because the Reds also have like five other, like, their whole system is middle infielders, which is good. And then again, you can never have too much of, like, they will hopefully, if they develop and their big team gets better, then they'll trade some of them. But like, all those guys with him and McClain, and they just got Noelvi Marte and Edwin Arroyo up the middle. I mean, these are good problems to have. I'm just fascinated to see how those shake out. Not to mention Jose Barrero, who is, I guess, still around and barely recently graduated. So I'm curious to see how all those guys kind of end up shaking out. Any other quick ones? Then I want to drop some top 100 fun facts, and then we can do a quick rookie of the year chat, and then go to Grayson.
Gunnar Henderson coming in at number one on four of these five lists. Mm-hmm. Everyone but Keith Law had him at number one, and Keith Law had Gunnar at number two and Corbin Carroll at number one. It is the first time on a lot of these lists where a single team has a chance to go back-to-back-to-back years, three in a row, with three different prospects at number one. Again, doesn't actually matter, but Jackson Holliday, who the Orioles took number one this year, could very well be the number one prospect in baseball at this time next year. And that would mean the Orioles had Adley, Gunnar, Jackson Holliday, number one, back-to-back-to-back years. Now, granted, that means absolutely fucking nothing if they don't win at the big league level, right? Yep. But it is indicative that this organization, you know, like, Adley and Jackson Holliday, you get because you suck, right? Mm-hmm. But Gunnar, who is at number one on most of these lists, is different. He was the first pick of the second round, which tells you that every team in baseball had a chance to draft this guy. Mm-hmm. And the Orioles' ability to identify and then properly develop a player like that to where he is in the big leagues holding his own before he turns 22, only 4 years after he gets drafted, right? Mm-hmm. 3 years after he gets drafted. Mm-hmm. That shows you that the Orioles player development system has improved beyond just, like, the way I think about it, right, is the 2011 Nats, where, like, those teams were losing so much that they got Strasburg and Harper and like it was, you know, and that was it. And then it took them forever to get the rest of the pieces. Like none of those other guys developed. Like the Nats were very good for a long time, but there was no player development going on, really.
No, they ended up kind of, you know, buying it on the back end with Scherzer and the and obviously, you know, So yeah.
Look at Victor Robles, right? Like there was the player development apparatus there wasn't working and maybe still isn't working, and that's a longer conversation we could have. But my point is that for the Orioles specifically, and this will translate to what we talk about with Grayson later, they have so many bats on these lists that weren't necessarily top picks that they have turned into top 100 prospect types.
Yep. Yep. On top of the nailing Adley and obviously, hopefully Jackson Holliday as well. And Grayson, right, of course, who was a first round pick that was, it was that was a divisive one at the time. So I'll let that kind of lead into just some other themes that I thought were interesting about the top 100 list. So I kind of took note of, you know, who had the most, so, you know, when you see on individual lists, oftentimes pipeline will put out, oh, you know, the Orioles had the most and oh, the so-and-so had the most. And so I kind of combined all five of these lists and I saw, okay, well, which teams had the most representation across all of these lists? So across these five lists, we're really talking about 150 different prospects that got named. 151, 155 really, but Baseball America counting Yoshida and Senga, and I'm not, those, they're not prospects. They're adults who played professionally for many years in Japan's Little League. So I'm not considering them prospects. So really 151 prospects across these five lists, 63 players appeared on all five top 100 lists. So it's really, when you think, oh, who's a top 100 prospect? I would argue there's really 63 of them that are clearly, no doubt everyone agrees, is a top 100 prospect. Now, can I just touch on that quickly? Yeah.
And the last prospect I was actually going to talk about is Kyle Manzardo.
Yeah. Who's one of them. First base.
Who's one of them. Exactly. First base prospect for the Rays. And what I love is that he comes in between 60 and 83 on all five lists. So there is this consensus idea that he is like a starting first baseman in the big leagues. And if you take a look at where he is and the guys he's next to on the lists, they don't show up on every list. But I like that across the industry, it's like, yeah, Kyle Manzardo, first
Kyle baseman. Manzardo is exactly this. Yes. No, I totally agree, right? And that's where it's fun. And you could see some of the other ones that have huge variance in you know where they're ranked, which is fun. But so if you combine all, if you consider these 151 prospects that got named, the teams that had the most different players named, Orioles, as you mentioned, 11 different players showed up on these top 100 lists. Dodgers also had 11, which is, again, you might be wondering, oh, well, Dodgers, oh, they didn't do as much free agency. Well, okay, because they have Michael Busch, they have James Outman, who even showed up on one of these lists. They have Miguel Vargas. Like these are big league ready guys, not to mention Bobby Miller and some of the other pitchers at the top of their system, Gavin Stone, Nick Nastrini. Like these guys are going to impact the Dodgers soon. That's why they're so good. Cleveland comes in with 8, Tampa, St. Louis, and Milwaukee, which was a surprising one for me, at 7. Now, what about the opposite? Jake, the Atlanta Braves, even if you expand it to the 150 prospects, have a fat ofer, 0, 0. Now, do they care? Not one bit, because they have Michael Harris and they have Spencer Strider, who just graduated. And honestly, what it makes me think is, I mean, I'm not really seeing who that is right now, but someone in that system is way better than we think, you know, and I'm not totally sure who that is. And they do have some exciting young high school pitchers for sure that they drafted more recently, guys like Owen Murphy, guys like J.R. Ritchie. But this is the worst system in the league, comfortably.
Not close.
Not close. By far the worst farm system in baseball. And that's also part of why they're extending other players in the big leagues, because they know they're good and because, well, might as well. There's not a lot of help on the way. But it is another fascinating thing to kind of remember. And yet, again, think about it. They're the worst system in the league by far, and they still were able to trade for Sean Murphy. Bizarre. Hilarious. Baseball doesn't make any sense. It's it is so, so, so goofy. So that one's interesting. The other teams that have very few, Kansas City, Toronto, and Houston, only with 2. Angels, White Sox, Mariners, Padres, Phillies, and Giants, only with 3. So those are just some fun facts about the top 100 lists. We'll cut it off here. Quick, Jake, Rookie of the Year, AL, NL. I think the interesting, now listen, Senga and Yoshida will be favorites because they are eligible, and that's understandable in both leagues. Of course, Gunner and Carroll would be the obvious ones because we expect them to be. So beyond the super obvious ones at the top, are there any other ones that you think could be interesting?
Edouard Julien with the Minnesota Twins.
That's a good one.
I think he is, I don't know what I'm talking about at all. But he is someone who I think is underranked on all these lists. I think he's a big league ready hitter who's going to hit for a high average and just like be in the mix, I think. I know the Twins infield is a little crowded, but I just think that guy can really hit. Other rookie of the year types, guys who are going to be up the whole year, scrolling down the list. I don't think Volpe will be up enough to do that.
And even if he was, I am not convinced he's going to have the offensive impact right away unless he's like the story, right? That's the other thing. If he just is the Yankees shortstop for 140 games and is like at all good and the Yankees win the division and win a bunch of games,
yeah,
I could see that being a thing. But yeah, that's kind of hard to say. I guess you could say the same thing about Beatty and Alvarez, but I'm not really seeing the at-bats for them.
A couple other guys who will be playing a lot this year. Bo Naylor, Josh Naylor's little brother, who's a catcher with the Guardians. He might not be the starter to begin the year, but Mike Zunino is a nice baseball player and definitely good, but certainly injury prone. And I would imagine Bo Naylor gets a decent amount of time there during the season. Logan Ohapi with the Angels, another catcher, is another good pick if you want to keep on eye on a guy for rookie of the year. Josh Young in Texas should be their opening day.
That one, I think, playing time wise, I think is a really, really, really good pick. Definitely Ohapi as well. And Cassis, I think, is the other one to mention who we would expect to be up for most of the season with Boston and could just hit 30 homers and kind of make it kind of obvious. So that's a good one. And then pitchers are really hard to predict, right? Like, I mean, Cade Cavalli is someone who should be in the rotation the whole year for the Nationals. I mean, I'm not expecting a lot of wins, but I do like Cade Cavalli a lot, and he just might end up with, you know, a ton of strikeouts. So that would be another
one. And the one thing that people have mentioned, and this will transition well to our interview, is that the Orioles do have a chance to accomplish something this year that had not been accomplished for some time until the Braves just did it, which is to have a pitcher-hitter combo 1-2 in the Rookie of the Year voting with Gunnar Henderson as the hitter and Grayson Rodriguez as the pitcher. And if that's something that interests you, well, do I have good news for you, because we will be right back after this break with a sit-down chat with the number 1, 2, or 3 prospect, pitching prospect in baseball, Grayson Rodriguez.
Negro Leagues Baseball Museum President Bob Kendrick hosts the SiriusXM original podcast, Black Diamonds.
The Negro Leagues didn't care what color you were, and they didn't care what gender you were. Can you play?
Hear stories of the leagues and legends that shaped sport, culture, and society.
That's why the museum is so important. It's like, we are never going to forget you.
Episodes of the award-winning Black Diamonds are now available wherever you get your podcasts.
We're not talking about balls and strikes. We're talking about your life.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. We are very excited to be joined by a very special guest, Mr. Grayson Rodriguez of the Baltimore Orioles. Grayson, thank you for joining us, my friend.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you all for having me on here.
So let's just start with your offseason. You and Jordan have had a very similar offseason in one way, and that is that you both got engaged. So congratulations to you both. Is there anything I need to know as a non-engaged guy?
I don't know.
You go first, Grayson, because mine actually happened back in August, so I barely even remember how the hell went down. So you tell us. It seems like a little more recently. Congratulations.
Thank you. Mine was on New Year's Eve. I guess that's a time that a lot of them happen. And let's see. Went out to dinner. You know, she didn't have any idea. Her mom and her sister came to our house, set it all up, and my fiance now, she loves the Ring cameras. We got Ring cameras on the outside of the house, so she's always checking the Ring cameras. Like, it sets an alert on her phone. Like, I mean, every time you let the dog outside to go to the bathroom or something, they're going off. So we had to figure out a plan on how to get her mom and her sister and her friend to the house without her knowing. So I had to climb up in the attic and unplug like the Wi-Fi system or whatever, just so the cameras wouldn't go off. And so she wouldn't know who was home, you know, and the whole, like when we were at dinner, she even said, she's like, the cameras aren't working. I don't know what's going on. Like, just like it's, she's some, you know, security agent. So anyways, got all that under control. And then, you know, asked her the question when we got back.
Love to hear it.
I mean, we have a lot of baseball questions that we definitely will get to, but this is an amazing story for several reasons. Of course, the biggest thing is she had no idea, but it does seem like you had to do some complicated, almost like heist level, you know, blocking of your own security cameras. That is fascinating. A challenge that I think most people are not usually having to deal with. So, but you did it. You pulled it off though. She was surprised and it was great.
She actually thought she was getting a new car, but nope.
So she's disappointed, I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure.
Yeah, a little disappointed.
Dang, I wanted the new car. So for those of you unfamiliar with Grayson, you could probably tell by now that he is not from the North. In fact, Grayson is from a state, a country, some believe, called Texas. And he is from a town in Texas called, and again, I'm going to do my best here, Nacogdoches, yep. Texas, the home of Stephen F. Austin University. So before we ask you about baseball, you seem incredibly proud to be from Texas. What does it mean to you to be Texan?
I don't know. It's kind of, you know, like being from Baltimore, you know, people are proud of that. Just being proud where you're from, born and raised here. So grew up, a country boy, I guess you could say. Not a redneck. That's a little bit different, more severe. Not my style.
So there's a spectrum, right? Yeah. There's like Jake and Jordan have never been hunting. We're like city people. Then there's like you, which is country boy. And then there's redneck, which is like out in the boonies.
And then you go to hillbilly and, you know, there's difference. There's a lot of differences.
You're you country know, so, boy.
So in the South, kind of where I'm at, you know, there's country boys who are a little bit more civilized. Then like, you have your uncivilized rednecks. And then when you get into the Carolinas, you have your hillbillies. Okay. A little bit in Arkansas, you know, wherever there's mountainous region.
What's interesting, like for us, right? Like if I meet someone, they don't know where I'm from. Like I could be from, you know, anywhere in America. For you, you hear Grayson's voice and you're like, that guy is from fucking Texas, right? Right away. You can't hide it. It's a part of you. And I love that you carry it to the point that there are literally deer on the wall behind you. And we will get to your hunting escapades in a second. But we want to turn the clock back to your Nacogdoches high school days. And we'll start with this. You're dominating the local league in high school on the mound. At what point did it go from I'm really good for Nacogdoches to I'm going to be drafted to I'm going to be drafted in the first round?
So Nacogdoches has a high school and it's bigger. Like it's not necessarily a small town. Obviously we have a Division I university here, but I grew up transferring to a school just north of Nacogdoches called Central Heights. So that's where I started going, I believe in the fourth grade, you know, like all my little baseball buddies were there. So went to high school there. And it was a little bit smaller of a school than Nacogdoches, but I guess my parents did a good job of always having me on a good team. You know, that their whole saying growing up was like, I'm never going to be the best on the team. If I'm the best on the team, we need to find another team. So it gives you something to work for. Growing up, just kind of being fortunate, you know, always playing on good ball teams. In high school, you know, we won a lot of games, beat the heck out of a lot of schools. But really just kind of, you know, never – thought I was that good until draft day when I heard my name called. You know, before the draft, I was going to Texas A&M. Like, that's what I was set on. That was pretty much my decision. And then I was drafted in the first round by the Orioles, and, you know, that just kind of throws all that out the window. But, you know, very fortunate to have that had happened. And then really just kind of the first time I thought about, you know, that I belong here was when I got to – Sarasota in the rookie league the first year.
Yeah, and the stuff came out good. I want to ask you about Jordan's going to ask you about draft day in a second, But I'm on the Central Heights High School Wikipedia page right now, Jordan. First of all, go Blue Devils. But the thing I notice about this Wikipedia page, Grayson, is there is no notable alumni section. And we gotta make sure you start that off. I mean, this just doesn't exist on here.
So Central Heights has not had anybody in the big leagues yet. They've had Trey Haley, I think, was in an early 2000s draft pick. He made it to AAA with the Indians, now mm-hmm. the Guardians. Mm-hmm. And then a guy named Dane Phillips, who is a catcher, I believe he made it to AA or AAA.
Yeah.
And then Alex Phillips, another pitcher, AA, AAA. And then a guy that I work out with right now in the offseason, his name's Duke Gallis. He's playing for, I believe, Birmingham, the AA team for the White Sox, I think.
Yeah.
So those are all, you know, the pro ball guys. That
you know, it's going to be great when one day it just says notable alumni, Grayson Rodriguez, and that's it. Like, that's going to be the notable alumni page.
Hopefully we get a few more. So yeah, I got a brother. I got a brother that's a freshman in high school now. So he's bigger than I am.
Whoa. He's bigger than you are.
So I'm 6'5", and my brother, who is 14 years old, is 6'7".
Okay. Basketball I'm sorry. Player. We need to talk about him for 30 seconds here. What how quick did he, I don't know when you had your growth spurt, because you're also, you know, we've met you. You're even for a big league, you know, hopeful pitcher, you're a pretty big guy. When did that happen? Is he pitching? Is he throwing? Is he hitting 500-foot home runs? Like, what's the deal here? What is his name? We have to know this guy.
Yeah, so his name is Garner. He's a better baseball player than a basketball player, which is kind of hard to believe. So, like, you know, he's a freshman. Not too many freshmen can dunk pretty easily like he can, especially
six,
in high school.
He's 6'7". Yeah.
Just to reach his arm up. He's right up at the rim. Okay. It's easy.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is he a pitcher?
Yeah, so he pitches and then plays corner infield, third and first base.
Like you,
I played positions.
You did that too, right? You played third.
Yeah, yeah, I played positions growing up. My dad was an outfielder that played college baseball at a West Texas school, Sol Ross State. So we were always in the batting cage more than we were on the pitcher's mound. So that, you know, obviously we see how that ended up with me. But anyways. He went to Cary, North Carolina this last mm-hmm. summer, the USA baseball type stuff, mm-hmm. Started getting a little involved with that, you know, did actually really well at the showcases they had. So hopefully there's some good things in store for him. So
he's 14, all you scouts listening, for all you scouts listening, if you're interested in Grayson Rodriguez, well, just wait, because there's a taller one.
So we're talking 2026 draft. It sounds like.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, but we'll, again, long way to go. And I imagine at that age, too, all the coordination isn't totally there yet, right? He's kind of figuring out how to be that big, I imagine, is the challenge right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, he's figuring it out. He's actually coming to his body, you know, a lot better over the last year. You know, when he was in middle school, he's like a little baby giraffe, but right. But now starting to be kind of coordinated, can dribble the basketball a little bit. So really excited to see, you know, how he does this high school season. Obviously, I'm not going to be there to watch his games. So, you know, videos will have to do. So,
well, I think there will be video of the 6'7 freshman pitcher in Texas. I think that people will be noticing that very soon. Okay, so let's get back to your draft day, because something that is you know, now we see you and you're, you know, one of the top pitching prospects in baseball. We know what you've done in the minor leagues, hopefully the big leagues soon. But the fact is, in baseball history tells us that high school right-handed pitchers are a very risky demographic. It is a group of pitchers that one has never gone number one overall. And that is because, for a lot of reasons, just pitching's hard, pitching development is hard, injuries are hard, and getting those to the big leagues is hard, right? Now, you have been immediately one of the more successful versions of that story. Was that something you knew when you were being scouted and once you entered pro ball of how kind of tough that demographic challenge is as you enter the professional ranks, or you're just kind of going about your business as much as you could?
Yeah, so in high school, when I was a sophomore, let's go back there. When I was a sophomore, I was up to 95, I think, in some perfect game type stuff. When I was a junior, the first scrimmage of the high school season, I hit a home run on the inside part of the plate. It jammed the heck out of me. We had a kind of a short porch in right field at our high school, and I broke my hamate bone. So I didn't know at the time what had happened. Obviously it hurt like heck. And our high school trainer was just, they thought it was like wrist tendonitis. So my whole junior year, I played with a broken hamate bone, and it hurt to pitch, it hurt to hit, it hurt to do everything. And I was throwing like 90 to 92 with a broken hand. So then I guess all the
a broken throwing hand. You were so, throwing with broken, a broken hand, 92.
So I had a, you know how like the position players tape their wrists, you know, during the games, like with the tape.
Yeah.
So we had to get like a tan colored tape that I could tape my wrist just so I could pitch. And so I did that the whole season. Well, you know, I regressed from 95 down to 90. So then your junior year is a big scouting year, right? Coming into your senior year. So I guess a lot of the scouts kind of wrote me off. Like I kind of took a step back, you know, whatever, like going to school. Well, then at the end of my junior season, I figured out that I had a broken hand. So I had the surgery going into the fall, and then came back for my senior year up to 98 in high school. So like it just kind of came all back together. And then started getting a lot of pro scouts show up to my games. And so I guess that's kind of why, you know, it all happened very last minute for me in the draft. Mm-hmm. But literally, I mean, when was the draft? It was like, they used to have it, what, June 6th?
Yeah, June 5th.
I don't know, somewhere in there. I mean, literally thought I was going to school, Texas A&M, you know, my advisor at the time, which is still my agent, had said, you know, he's like, well, you might go in the third round, the fourth round. We don't know, you know.
Day of? So, you're still thinking third, fourth round, like, well, day of or right before? Or
no. Well, up all the way up until about a week before the draft, you know, started kind of getting, I guess, a feel for it. But on draft day, we were just kind of looking at the end of the first round, maybe early second round. And then we were sitting there. We saw it on TV that it popped up, I guess, 11th overall. I think that's what it was. I don't know. Yeah. Something. But yeah, saw it pop up on TV and everything.
So you could go on to have a long, phenomenal career in the big leagues. And chances are you will remain the second most famous Texan taken in the 2018 MLB draft. And that is because one Kyler Murray was taken two picks ahead of you that year. So like you were committed to Texas A&M. I know Kyler spent some time at Texas A&M. Like when you were watching that, and like now when you watch the Arizona Cardinals on TV, is there anything that's like very odd to you that this quarterback was just like taken two picks ahead of you?
Yeah, it's really weird to think about. Sometimes it's brought up, you know, when we're working out with, you know, other pro ball players in the off season. But yeah, it's kind of funny to think about that, like that, you know, there was the number 9th pick, I guess, is what it was. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know, just quarterback, two-way player. You know, I'm not going to play baseball. I'm going to go play football. So that's kind of cool. I guess it's actually pretty cool, you know, that it happened. That's kind of the weird little fun fact about that draft.
It's one of the crazier things that we continually remind myself, right? I'm just looking up, reading about your draft, and I'm like, oh, Kyler Murray is just there, 9th, sure. Like a thing that happened, and we just all kind of moved on from it as if it wasn't one of the more bizarre picks we've seen in baseball. It's crazy, but that's good. You don't take it too personally. You're not like, guys aren't telling you, like, how good could this guy be? He was picked after Kyler Murray. I mean, he can't be that good. There's no way.
The only difference is I don't think I could read a defense, so okay. That might be kind of tough. Yeah. Might be kind of tough on my part.
I've heard that's a key part of playing football. So the O's take you in the summer of 2018, and I think you, more than any other player in the Orioles organization, you have been around for the entire change and development of that team. You were taken during the last year of the Duquette era, and now we are in year five almost of the Mike Elias era. And I'm curious for you, how has the organization changed over time as you've been there? Whether it's player development, whether it's scouting, what are some of the things that you've seen that have, you know, stayed the same maybe, and some things that have gotten different year to year as you've gotten older?
So I'm going to start it off like this. I think everything about the organization changed, but the name, like that was that, I mean, it was insane. Right. Yeah. So I show up as just a high school kid. Right. And there's no TrackMan. There's no Edgetronic cameras. There's no technology like computers. Like, I mean, there's obviously computers, you know, in the coach's room, this, everything, you know, like they have to take their notes, you know, whatever. But in terms of like from a player standpoint, we really didn't use computers, technology, videos, much of that in the minor leagues. Now, big leagues, obviously a lot different. I can't speak for that because I wasn't there. But just the way that our pitching philosophy was, it was like, hey, you know, as a starter, we're going to go out in the first three innings and we're just going to throw nothing but fastballs and we're going to see if that works. And like terrible, terrible idea. Right. And so I think it's funny to look at the things like back yeah. then, like what they were telling us. And then of course, Michael Elias comes in that off season. I think right after the season ended, like it was November mm-hmm. maybe yep. when he was hired. Mm-hmm. You know, he came in, and then I had not been to spring training yet. So I had, you know, I don't know how spring training was, with the old front office, but show up and you're like, hey, like, what is that little blue box behind the bullpen mound? There's the cameras. You know, we start getting the TrackMan portable units. There's computers everywhere. Like you're seeing all this stuff, getting a lot of feedback. And then it's hard to just turn around an entire minor league coaching staff. So you kind of saw the coaches like leave, like, hey, where's he going? Oh, he's fired, you know? And it's like, uh-oh. So then all that kind of stuff started happening. And then I would say the first time I really got to experience the change was in 2019, during the first full season when I learned how to throw a changeup. So we brought in one of our pitching coaches who's just a special human. His name's Justin Ramsey. He was our pitching coach in AAA last year. He's a really good at, I guess, dissecting pitching, you know, the way the ball's spinning on the slow motion cameras, TrackMan data, stuff like that. So we completely just developed a changeup in like a month, and it turned out to be like my best pitch. And so that was a big thing. I know when I went to the Futures game in 2019, people were saying, calling it like a screwball, in which I was turning, I pronate it so hard when I throw it. Changeups really don't spin all that much. I'm trying to spin mine like an off-speed pitch to make it move. So we came up with that. And then really just kind of seeing the organization take course seasons after that, you know, with all the stuff that we brought in.
So I have to follow up on the changeup in particular, because you just mentioned it yourself. And if you're a prospect person and you know about Grayson, that's it, right? It's the changeup. But the fact that is a pitch that you just had never really thrown in high school, at least not to that level of effectiveness. And for that to immediately become one of the best pitchers in all the minor leagues shows you how effective and important pitching development is, right? And I imagine you lived it and you experienced it. I'm sure you saw that happening across the whole organization. It wasn't just you. I'm sure you were seeing your teammates experiencing similar levels of development. Is that fair to say?
Oh yeah. You know, it's not just me that benefited, you know, from all this. Obviously, you know, we've got, I don't know how many pitchers are in a minor league organization. I mean, it's gotta be close to 100 at least. Mm-hmm. But just kind of seeing the course just on the pitching side, that has nothing to do with the hitting side. You know, obviously we've got some hitters that can swing it a little bit, but you know, pitching, like basically you throw all these pitchers into this system, and this system tells them what each pitcher does the best. And then that information is relayed to the pitcher. Well, then that pitcher goes out and uses that to his knowledge of like, hey, you know, I thought my slider was the best, but actually, you know, my changeup's the best. Or I throw a two seam fastball, but like naturally my ball cuts and that's better. So like you go out, you use that. Well, then you start having all these pitchers just coming out of the woodworks, like good numbers, good numbers, good numbers. And then next thing you know, you've got 40 dudes that are like just shoving every time they go out, you know, and then it completely just did a 180 from the pitching perspective.
I'm super interested on the changes in the coaching that you talked about, because something that I've noticed is baseball right now as a whole is in a really interesting, bizarre place with coaching, where I think you have some coaches who are coaches for themselves. They do it because they played and they think that's what they have to do next and they want to stay in the game. And then you have coaches who are coaches to make the players better. And I'm curious if this is something that you noticed, that the Orioles kind of flipped this over time. In my mind, like, I just know, like, Ryan Fuller, the assistant big league coach, right? Like, he's there for the players, right? Not for himself. And I'm curious if that was a big part of the development kind of turning around.
Yeah, so that's, you know, that's a good point. So we had a lot of ex-players that were coaches for the old regime. They kind of got let go. And then new coaches are brought in with less of a playing background, but head and heels better, you know, coaching, I guess, attribute. Like, these guys know how to play baseball players. And that was the difference, I guess. You know, it's obviously it's great to have ex-players, because as a player, you won't ask a coach, you know, how to handle something. What he did, or, you know, he knows what it's like to be in your shoes. But there's that balance between having a guy that knows what he's coaching about and can relay that information much better to making everybody a better player.
Yeah. So we are now, Grayson Rodriguez, on the cusp of the big leagues. You've done all you need to do in the minor leagues. And, you know, chances are, if you don't have that injury last year, you probably do get up in 2022. But I'm curious for you, what was your experience of watching the 2022 Orioles, who were one of the most surprising, exciting baseball teams that we've had in some time, just from a, you know, expectation versus reality standpoint? They outperformed their expected win total by what, like 40 games, you know? And so for you, where you weren't in that clubhouse every day, but you're still intimately connected with a lot of the people who are up, what was that experience like for you of like following that season?
Yeah, it was a very cool experience. So finally being able to watch like a big league game, and, you know, your friends are playing, like your friends are on TV. Like, this is a guy that you text every day, and then at night you get on and play video games with, like whether it's Call of Duty, like PGA, like golf, or like whatever. Like, these are your boys that are up there playing. They're on the big screen. And that's really cool to watch, because – you know, it gives you the feeling that you're really close to, you know, dreams becoming reality. And then to see them basically outperforming what people thought they would, you know, that's a lot of fun. That's special. Getting to see Adley, you know, just go up into the big leagues and just like start just raking, you know, from day one. Gunner, you know, Gunner's a kid. Like, people don't understand. It's like, We always joke around, but like, Gunner's like a man child, and to see him go up into the big leagues and then just transition like perfectly, you know, like, and that goes for, you know, Kyle Stowers, Taron Vavra, like some of these other guys that the Orioles called up, you know, like just playing with them. Like, I faced Taron in 2019, my first year of pro ball, when he was with the Rockies. He had my number. Like, he had like two doubles and a triple or something crazy off me when we were playing in Asheville North Farm. And then we traded for him and everything. And that was cool to see him come over with us. But, you know, just kind of seeing these guys, you know, that, you know, in the big leagues, and then them have success. Like, it's a lot of fun.
And what seems great about it too, is like, when you're on the cusp of the big leagues and you're close to like reaching the thing that you've always wanted to do your whole life, like, that's cool no matter what team you're on. But when you're a part of an organization and a part of a team where it's like green arrow trending up, and I'm sure you know guys in other organizations that are on the cusp of the big leagues where it's not necessarily that same type of optimism, right? And so it's like, there is the opportunity to be part of something kind of special here. Jordan, what were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to add, like, it's it's different when you're in Delmarva and you're watching the big league team. You don't know any of those guys, right? And so it doesn't feel as real as when you're in AA and AAA and the guy that you were playing with yesterday gets called up to play in Baltimore tomorrow. I know that people know how good Adley is and now how good Gunnar is, right? I mean, these are top prospects in baseball. And for the most part, they know how good you are, right? Like, you guys have ascended to the tops of the prospect list and people know who you are. But I think what's so exciting about the Orioles' future is how many guys are there, especially in the upper minors. So you know these guys firsthand because they are your friends. So who are some of the other guys, whether pitching or hitters? They can be on prospect list, but beyond Adley and Gunnar, we all know how special they are, that you're excited to see with you in Baltimore in the next couple of years, or just other prospect names that you are most excited to see, and people don't really know how good they are.
So I guess I don't want to be doing anybody a disservice by only calling out a few names because there's a bunch.
Of course.
But like the first couple names that come to my mind – are Connor Norby, the second baseman that we drafted only like what, a year or two ago? Mm-hmm. And he made it up to AAA this year for the end of the season. We were playing in Durham, I think. He played there that week and then three games at home. And dude hit like three or four homers, like just with no problem, you know, just you know, your second baseman just going out there and just hitting jacks. Like he hit, I think, 30 something this year in the minor leagues, which is just insane. It's insane for any minor league player, but a second baseman doing that, like really? So that was pretty cool to watch that, get to see, kind of experience that. Jordan Westberg, who's a good buddy of mine, Mississippi State. He's also from Texas. You know, he's kind of like a silent killer, right? Like goes about his business, you know, doesn't say much. Just goes out every night, performs. And then another one is Joey Ortiz, another shortstop, which that dude is going to win a few gold gloves in his big league career. It's a lot of fun to watch him field the ball. You know, really, like, you know, that I just named off two shortstops and a second baseman. And then, of course, you know, you got Gunnar in the big leagues, another shortstop, whatever you're going to call him. But, I mean,
bro,
man,
Ortiz
it's like
– here for wait, for the people listening who've never heard the name Joey Ortiz – just go to his baseball reference page and look at the numbers that he put up this season. They're absolutely absurd, especially down the second half. Once he kind of figured out a couple things, this is a guy not a lot of people know who I think has a chance to be super duper special. One thing I want to ask you, Grayson, is, you know, with your last name being Rodriguez, there is a tendency to just find a Rodriguez and throw the nickname, first letter of your first name, Rod, right? We've had A-Rod, now where's Julio Rodriguez is J-Rod. We've had K-Rod. How do you feel about the simplicity of G-Rod? Do you prefer Grod? Or are we looking for an alternate nickname for you right now?
No, G-Rod does it. That's fine. That's been my nickname my whole life. So I know, like, Baltimore fans kind of throw around Gray Rod, but nobody's ever called me that, even in the clubhouse. So just kind of simplify it down to G-Rod. You know, it's kind of mainstream, but it's just that easy, I guess. So I guess thank you, A-Rod, or whoever, you know, was the first one to be called that. So
shouts out to the OG Rod.
Yeah, yeah. Whoever. Well, you do have to be some level of good for everyone to start calling you that. Like that's. But to your point, it sounds like you've been G-Rod since you were before you were throwing 95. It sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I G-Rod, I guess, since I was on the T-ball field. I don't know, good
although
or not.
This is bad news for your brother. It sounds like we are going to have to come up with something new for him. That he's the one that is really going to have to come up with something else. So, but we got some time. We got some time for him before he's, you know, getting nicknames thrown around for him by prospect people and whatnot. So we can table that discussion. My last question for you, Grayson, involves the things we see behind you. if you're listening on the podcast. How about you describe for the listeners, and maybe we'll put some video out, but why don't you describe for the listeners what we're seeing behind you, and then I have a couple of questions related.
Yeah, so, you know, my favorite thing to do in the offseason is hunt. That's white-tailed deer specifically. Mm-hmm. Grew up, my uncle that taught me how to hunt. He's a wildlife biologist. So, you know, he deals with, you know, animals on a daily basis, the science behind all of it. Really, I guess people sometimes put a label on deer hunting as like a lot of killing. You know, kind of what we do or what I like to do is like deer management. So think about a herd of deer, right? And you get all the analytic numbers, you know, the herd samples, all this stuff, right? And then basically like you kind of create the perfect system of like making sure it's not overpopulated, underpopulated. You know, you plant agriculture products so the deer can thrive and, you know, grow. And kind of in return, you know, you get to harvest the old bucks. You let the young ones walk. And you know, you let them have fawns and you try to create a healthy herd, for, you know, future generations down the road to hunt, to, you know, eat the food that they provide, but also get to have fun doing it.
A true Oriole. He's got deer analytics. I mean, this is incredible that they have really got you. They're probably giving you some coding systems so you can make sure you've got the most efficient. It's great. I love it. It makes all the sense in the world. Let me tell you, some organizations are not going this deep, but Grayson Rodriguez, I am not surprised. But the thing I'm curious now, because we knew this, and when we talked to you at the Futures game, we talked to you about, you know, your hunting. I mean, it seems more than a hobby. That seems like kind of not even calling it how much, you know, time and energy you spend on it. But what I'm curious is that, you know, hopefully you'll be, you know, be in Baltimore more often. And have you started to scout out any possible hunting opportunities closer to the Eastern Seaboard? Because I'm sure it's a little bit of a different scene than it is down in Nacogdoches. But I have a feeling that you have a pretty good sense for what that scene is.
Yeah, so it's a much different place than Nacogdoches. Actually, 2 weeks ago, I believe, me and DL Hall, another pitcher buddy.
We know
mine,
he likes
so
he's to hunt
probably,
fish.
Oh, probably, yeah. Probably one of my best friends, right? Big duck hunter.
Yep.
So we actually got to go hunt the Chesapeake Bay. It was my first time, you know, lot of waterfowl there, right? All the crabs, you know, that are probably swimming under the water and stuff, but we're looking for the birds, you know, in the air and getting to go hunt the Chesapeake Bay. I mean, that was a lot different than what I'm used to. So it was a lot of fun, you know, kind of seeing how, you know, folks from the Eastern Shore, Maryland do things. It was a lot of fun, but yeah, you know, there's definitely a lot of spots around Baltimore that, you know, you could hunt some deer, shoot some ducks.
You got to bring your boots. Right. What do they call it? Like water, what are the water boots for duck hunting? What are those called?
Waders.
Yeah.
Yeah. They come up to your chest. Like, you know, you can walk out literally and as deep as you want, as long as your chest's above water, you're not letting the water in. So
I would say the day we met you, Grayson, at the Futures game back in 2018 or 2019.
Mm-hmm. 19, yeah.
Was also one of the funnier interview moments of our career when we were interviewing DL Hall and we were like, if we've never gone duck hunting, if we're in the woods duck hunting, what's the one thing we need to know? And DL Hall goes, well, your first problem is that you're in the woods hunting ducks.
It was like, oh, right. Now that said, this might be a better question for DL since you mentioned he's more of a duck hunter. But my final question for you, in waders, how hard could you throw? Like, how much velo is that taking? And how heavy are they? I have no idea. Like, is it like it, overalls, or is it heavier than that? Like, what?
So, oh yeah, they're a lot heavier. So like first off, it depends, I guess, what kind of waders you'd be in. There's some lighter waders. There's some heavier waders. Your heavier waders are insulated to keep you, you know, warm from the cold. And then your lighter waders typically don't have any insulation at all for warm weather. But I bet we could throw 90 in a pair of waders. Maybe that might be a stretch.
What's the problem? Is it like you can't get down the mound as easily, like the landing, the planting foot?
You don't have a lot of mobility in your legs. Like,
okay.
I don't know. It's almost like, you know what a hazmat suit looks like? It's almost like that. Like that's borderline what the waders look like. except without like the helmet and, mm-hmm. and the jacket, you know, mm-hmm. but it's basically like a very large pair of overalls with boots connected to them. So,
mm-hmm. yeah, I would definitely sap the velo, I would imagine, but we might have to challenge DL. He probably has a better answer for that question as he's probably thought about it before. Grayson Rodriguez, this was an absolute delight. We are so excited to watch you hopefully in the big leagues soon here in 2023. I know Jake, especially as an Orioles fan, this is a very cool time to be an Orioles fan. And I'm sure you're excited. So yeah, any final thoughts going into 2023? I imagine you're heading out of spring training soon.
Yeah. So actually we have a Birdland caravan this weekend. Mm-hmm. You know, buy your tickets for that if you still can. I know they're going pretty quick. But I know me, Adley, Gunner, DL, Taryn, you know, and a lot of the other big league guys will be there signing autographs, taking pictures with kids. You know, that's one of my favorite things to do is love to hang out with the kids, talk some trash to them because there's a lot, you know, kids that think they're better than you. But I love that. I love it. I love it. I love talking the kids up, you know. So we'll have some fun there. And then, you know, right after that ends, start packing the bags to head to spring training. So
amazing.
Getting ready for day number one.
Listen, Grayson, I coach Little League here in New York City for fun on the side. So, you know, if you're ever in town and you want to throw live to a couple kids or, you know, do some trash talking, I got some guys.
Yeah. Do some humbling for these kids.
Well, I'll do some trash talking, but I don't want to give up any homers. So I might not get on the mound with the little leaguers. But
a quick tale for you. So, you know, I played in college and the way I got involved with the league was someone found out I played in school and they wanted someone to come and like throw harder to the kids who were going to go playing in like the 12U tournament. And so they brought me in to pitch to all the kids. And I must have hit like 7 or 8 kids on that first day. Throwing, you know, like I was probably throwing like 75, 76. But like if you're 12 from 46 feet away and you're taking 76 in the back, like that's a tough day out. I was so embarrassed, man. Like I could only imagine Grayson Rodriguez 96 to the ribs of a 12-year-old. That is not what we want to see.
I trust that, Grayson's command a lot more than Jake's.
Thanks, for
you know, actually like, now that you bring that up, like I might have hit like 2 guys last year, and if I do hit somebody, it's like never with a fastball. So I guess like the fastball commands better, but usually it's always like a slider that like backs up or like a really bad changeup or something that's just really slow, and it just kind of like kisses the batter's arm or something, like just totally not even worth it. So
this is a great place to end, because you sometimes when you're talking to players and you say, you hear they're recounting their stats and they end up embellishing and you're like, oh, you actually only hit 1 guy last year. So that's the kind of guy that Grayson Rodriguez is. Not even 2. He only hit 1 in 2022. And so that is not going to be an issue, whether he's facing little leaguers or whether he's facing big leaguers. Grayson's keeping the ball in the zone because he doesn't need to hit. He can throw it right past you. That's all. He doesn't have to worry about, you know, sending a message.
Yeah. So. You know, when fights start getting chippy and, you know, it's all about, oh, hitting the hitter. Like, I would rather strike him out than let him have first base. You know, it's just kind of – it's kind of a baseball thing that's always been a little kind of, you know, to me. So
smart, I'd rather smart strike him man. Out. As if you needed another reason to like Grayson Rodriguez, there's another one. Grayson, thank you so much for the time. An absolute delight. And we'll catch you again soon, my friend.
Yeah, thank you all for having me on. It was fun.
And we're back here on a lengthy edition of Baseball Barbacast. We put the audio in your ears because Lord knows there's no other content to listen to. So it's got to be us. Jordan, before we say adios, goodbye, sayonara, let's hit on a few quick moves that happened over the last few days and bid adieu to one Dexter Fowler.
Yes, Dexter Fowler, honestly, probably one of my
early favorite players in the second edition of Jordan the Baseball Fan, right? Growing up, it was Sammy Sosa, obviously. I didn't care that much about baseball between the ages of like 7 and 12. And then once I'm getting in, I'm way back in. I really like the Rockies for some reason. I loved Dexter Fowler so much when he was with the Rockies. Such a fun player, incredible on-base ability, switch hitter, fun outfielder, awesome dude. Gave us a lot of just like really, really cool moments over his career with multiple different teams. And also, I mean, would you say he's the first big leaguer we interviewed? I mean, I think, yeah. When we went on our first road trip in 2014, first major league credentials in Houston, 2014. Awesome guy. Wish him the best. Love Dexter Fowler.
That great video of him losing his glove over the center field fence in Kansas City and then having to leap over it, get it, and come back. Was hilarious. And then something that I didn't totally realize is that he did not start switch hitting until he was drafted, which is ludicrous to have that level of athleticism and coordination to learn how to hit left-handed at age 18 is absurd.
And pretty normal splits. Like he was pretty much the same from both sides, which is absolutely wild. And yeah, like a 360 career on base, which is only more impressive now. like he was a really, really, really fun player. So I'm sure he'll be on TV. I mean, he's like a layup till we'll be around the game for sure.
Congrats to Dexter Fowler. We will see you on the Hall of Fame ballot in 5 years.
Who is not retiring is Zach Greinke, who has decided to run it back with the Royals one more time. We all kind of thought that this was last year was it, but why do you think he's coming back other than that it's fun to pitch and get paid for it?
I'm not leaving. I'm not fucking leaving. I'm not fucking leaving.
I'm fascinated by this. I mean, is he chasing any milestones? Like, again, it felt like last year, I know he was hurt a little bit. We got to see him actually pitch in AAA when we were doing some broadcasting and for the Omaha Storm Chasers. That was cool. But like, he was pretty good last year still, you know, made 26 starts. Like, again, it's still fun to pitch and get paid for it. And I'm sure, obviously, Zach Greinke loves baseball, but this is kind of odd. I mean, I love it, but it's odd.
But what's great about it for me, right, is that when you have a pitcher like Zach Greinke at this point in their career, where they're still good enough to pitch in the major leagues at an advanced age with diminished stuff, typically they'll latch on to a World Series contender to try and chase the World Series ring that they don't have. And Zach Greinke somehow does not have a World Series ring, okay? But he's like, fuck it. I want to be on the Royals, who are almost certainly not going to win the World Series. I just think it's an adorable, fascinating way for him to end what has been a no doubt Hall of Fame career.
I love Zach Greinke. Lowest strikeout rate in baseball of all pitchers with at least 100 innings, 12.5% K rate, and above average ERA because he is an absolute freak. We love you, Zach Greinke. I hope he
does. I mean this. I think if he wants to, he could definitely do another 4 years. Like, he's not going to get worse.
No, This is it. He's throwing 87 miles an hour and it's still working. So no, we love Greinke. A weird little trade. We got the Red Sox trading Matt Barnes to the Marlins after DFAing him for Richard Blyer. The writing was kind of on the wall for Barnes after they signed Kenley. They signed Chris Martin. But I like that the Marlins were like, oh, capital C closer? We don't have one of those. Come on down. Sure, Matt Barnes. I mean, he looked kind of cooked at times last year, but the Red Sox, I mean, he was used a lot. Like, they ran him into the ground over the last few years. And so I think he's still pretty good. I think he's still a solid reliever. And Blyer's just kind of a funky lefty that they don't really have right now. So, yeah, I thought it was fine. Makes sense.
Richard Blyer, two things stand out. Jordan, member of the Tribe, will be pitching for Team Israel in the World Baseball Classic. And of course, the triple balk last year.
The triple balk, a major league record, of course. He'll be bringing those balking talents up to Boston. Blue Jays signed Chad Green. He just got TJ. He's really good. It'll be weird when he's pitching. And we will forget that he signed with the Blue Jays. And then he will come back in 2025 and we'll be like, whoa, Chad Green. Oh, remember that guy? He was on the Yankees forever.
I hope he comes back with a beard just to like really confuse everybody, right? Because Chad Green with his big eyes, huge thighs, and clean shaven face has been a staple of the Yankees over the last few years. And to see him, you know, go away for like a year and a half and come back with a big beard on the Blue Jays,
I cannot picture him. He is, because he really has been, you know, one of the longer tenured Yankees. I cannot picture him at all with a beard. I can't even, I don't, this, that would be bizarre. So I totally agree with you. And then
it's
the last
been,
one, which
it's just been, and that'll be Chapman's third walk of the inning, and out comes Boone to bring in Green.
Yeah, he was put in like every possible situation. Like sometimes he would be coming in up five, down five, like highest leverage of the season. Like, all right, we're going to Chad Green. Like I could never totally figure out how much they believed in him. But like I always felt like he was pretty good. Like, I don't know. Anyway, Chad Green. We'll see you in a couple years. And then the last move, which is a transition to our final segment today, is that the Brewers signed Monty Harrison to a minor league contract. Monty Harrison. Wow. Wait, what a, speaking of prospects, this is a good coming back to the start. Maybe something we should have hit on a little bit earlier is that when you look at the prospect list and you see the tool grades and you see, oh, this guy sounds so good. Oh my God. He just hit 25 homers in high A. He's going to be an all-star in no time. Well, the reality is most of these players are going to suck. And you don't know who's it going to be, but sometimes it's Monty Harrison.
He's going to be an all-star no time.
So that's prospects, but it made me think about that trade, Monty Harrison. Again, long ago, a second round pick by the Brewers ultimately shipped to the Marlins for Christian Yelich. And now he's with the Angels for a hot second. Now he's made his way back to Milwaukee where he will try to recapture his prospect magic of many years ago. But also in that trade, Jake, was one Lewis Brinson, a similar profile to Monty Harrison, one whose physical abilities were so tantalizing for so many years with Texas, with Milwaukee, with Miami, and now with the Yomiuri Giants. And to finish off this podcast today, we are going to say farewell to those who have left us this offseason and taking their talents overseas to the great baseball leagues of Asia, mainly the KBO and NPB. And we are going to say goodbye to these players and wonder if we will ever see them again in MLB. So we got a pretty lengthy list here. We'll go quick, but these are some players that really evoke some real emotions. So I want to make sure we give them their respect.
That's a great point, Jordan, because not every player gets a David Ortiz, Mariano Rivera goodbye tour. Okay, more players should, because like you said, these players live in our hearts, in our minds, in our memories, stuck in our teeth for generations to come. These are players that we will tell our grandchildren about if the sun doesn't shrivel before that point, and they must receive a worthwhile adios.
Especially because the players that tend to go overseas, you don't necessarily know when it's going to happen. And so when Frank Schwindel was finishing up his season in Chicago and he was a fan favorite, no one knew that he was going to be on the Oryx Buffaloes 3 months later. Now, some people might have seen, oh, it looks like you can see the kind of profile of a guy that makes sense to go overseas. And you can see sense the theme with some of these guys we're going to name. But to your point, right, we don't know when it's going to happen. At the same time, this is a very real and cool opportunity for these players to go get usually a guaranteed $1 million that they are not at all guaranteed to get in the major leagues, where they would have to stick on the big league roster and stay and be XYZ. So that's why this happens, right? They get this opportunity overseas, and oftentimes we've seen it more and more lately, they can come back. And at the end of this conversation, we'll talk about how many we think will come back. But let's run through these. Lewis Brinson to the Yomiuri Giants. He was on the San Francisco Giants this past year. I believe he actually had a couple big games there this season. We're like, oh, is Brinson going to figure it out? He's going to Yomiuri. I mean, again, electric defender. When he gets a hold of one, it's a good time. But just hasn't been happening enough in the major league level. I hope it happens overseas and for Yomiuri Giants.
Marwin Gonzalez to the Oryx Buffaloes. Marwin Gonzalez was the number one beneficiary, financial beneficiary, maybe other than Jim Crane, of the 2017 Astros can banging jamboree. Go look at that Baseball Reference page and see how he turned just a little bit of cheating into what, like $35-38 million.
Yeah, I don't know if it was that much, but he got a nice little free agent deal with Minnesota that obviously did not go so well. But I mean, by all accounts, everyone liked him. You know, the Yankees brought him in still, even though he was, you know, cheater number one. And now he goes overseas to the Oryx Buffaloes.
This is what I love about Marwin Gonzalez. That if the Yankees had signed Carlos Correa, Yankees fans would have been like, boo, cheater, no. But they signed Marwin, who was a worse cheater, never owned up to it, and was a worse player.
He was terrible for the Yankees.
Terrible for the Yankees. And, I mean, maybe Yankees fans were mad. But, like, no one really cared because he didn't play that much and he's not famous. And, you know, whereas Correa, if they had gotten Correa, like, it would have been like, oh, my God. Right?
Yeah. No, it's a good point. It is a good point. All right. Next one. Aristides Aquino. Going to the Chunichi Dragons, and Jake, he gave us one of the great hot streaks in Major League Baseball history. Sure, the ball was juiced, of course, but my God, I've said this before, but the MLB HR notifications for Aristides Aquino homering during that stretch in 2019 there will never be anything like it. I've never laughed harder than when I would just, whatever, 8 days in a row or whatever it was. I got an Aquino homered again notification. A delightful personality, a fun player to watch. And I hope he just goes and hits 40 homers in Japan.
MLB pitchers were like, oh, we can throw him a slider off the plate?
Oh, okay. Oh, that'll do it. Williams Astudillo. Oh, man. Speaking of fan favorites, he's going over to the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks. This is a fascinating one because, like, is he going to just like hit 400 over there with like four home runs? Like this is not the profile I would expect to go overseas. And yet I could see him having a ton of success. So I'm just fascinated to see what kind of stats he puts up over there. I mean, one of the more unique players we've ever seen.
And the SoftBank Hawks are perennially one of the best teams in that league. And so I would imagine they know what they're doing.
They know what they're doing. Frank Schwindel, we mentioned him earlier, also going to the Oryx Buffaloes with Marwin. I mean, Frank, he had a nice little run there in 21 where it was like, is he going to be the next late breakout? Well, apparently not. But by all accounts, awesome dude.
Brian LaHare walked so that Frank Schwindel could also walk.
Did Brian LaHare, but also like not walk very often.
Not walking.
Did Brian LaHare ever make it over to Japan? I feel like he must have. This next one kind of breaks my heart, I got to be honest. Michael Franco heading to the Golden Eagles, Rakuten Golden Eagles. And Michael Franco, if we recall, was the player after Gene Segura finally made the postseason with the most, I believe the position player with the most career games to have never played in the postseason in MLB active. And that, I guess, will remain active. But I hope he goes to Japan. And now I'm just rooting for the Golden Eagles, which that's the team that Tanaka is still pitching for. And yeah, I would love to see Franco in the Japan series. That'd be cool. Get some postseason baseball in his life. Matt Davidson, I mean, this is just this is exactly who you would expect to be going over to Japan. If we're picking home run leaders in Japan 2023, I mean, Matt Davidson with the Hiroshima Carp, I mean, that's an absolute layup, right? I mean, I hope he can do his earthing over there. That's all I hope.
Tyler Beede from the San Francisco Giants to the Yomiuri Giants, just like our friend Lewis Brinson, and Luis Perdomo to the Chiba Lotte Marines, Yoan Lopez to the Yomiuri Giants, JB Wendelken to the Bay Stars, and Sheldon Noisy to the Hanshin Tigers. That is your NPB roundup.
KBO, there's really two notable ones for KBO. You know, Sean Anderson, he's the guy that looks like a Hemsworth who threw at Mike Trout's head and everyone got really mad at him. He's on the Kia Tigers now. Guillermo Heredia going to the SSG Landers. I mean, such an important part of these Braves teams. And now he's going to go over there. And like, he's just been such a bad hitter in MLB. Like, obviously a great defender, great base runner, but I'm curious like what kind of stats he's going to put up. The defending champion SSG Landers. So
remember when Freddie Freeman left and everyone was like, how's it going to affect the Braves clubhouse? And it didn't at all. Now you can ask that question about Guillermo Heredia.
That's way more legitimate. And then the last one I want to mention is Eric Fetty. former first round pick, Boris Kliant, going over to the NC Dinos in KBO. And I want to mention him because he is the one that I think of all of the guys I just named, although I'm curious your opinion, who I could totally see back in MLB a year from now. He could absolutely go and just carve Korean baseball and show that he's healthy. He can be a workhorse starter, put up more stats, more strikeouts. And even though he was maybe not that different than what he was in DC in 2022, he's still young enough where I think he's someone that could absolutely be back in MLB.
There is a term being thrown around a lot, especially by our friend Eric Langenhagen at Fangraphs, quote, developmental meat on the bone. The idea that certain teams and college programs are worse at developing certain types of players. And so teams target them knowing that there's still some work to be done. No MLB team is worse at developing pitchers, the big league level, than the Washington Nationals over the last few years. Eric Fetty did not get the most out of his skill set while he was in DC. I know that for a fact.
Yeah.
And so I am confident if the NC Dinos have good pitching dev that he can sort of unlock some stuff over
yeah.
Korea.
I mean, I was hoping that, you know, the Dodgers would sign him or something like that. You know, I'm sure we were hoping that, but again, to get that guaranteed money and guaranteed rotation spot, I'm sure it'll just, you know, just be pitching opening day for them or whatever. So an awesome dude. I mean, also one of the nicer guys we've met in baseball. And so definitely rooting for Fetty in Korea.
I need him to break out, Jordan, and come back so that my story about the time I had dinner at a Turkish restaurant in London with Eric Fetty, Lucas Giolito, and Max Fried can really, you know, hit home all the way.
Oh, hit even harder than it already does, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
All right. Sick, humble brag, dude. All right. Well, we're going to end it there. Thank you all for listening to this episode of Baseball Barbercast. This was a fun episode. Thank you to Grayson Rodriguez for joining us. We hope you guys enjoyed that. Go show him some love. I know.
Do you know what his dad calls him? You know what his dad calls him?
Well, what does his dad call him?
Great son, Rodriguez.
Thank you. That should have been the nickname you should have suggested earlier. And then also, as he mentioned, he'll be on the Birdland Caravan this weekend. So if you're in the Baltimore area, maybe you could go check it out there.
Toot, toot.
Toot, toot. But of course, you know, spring training coming up. Go check Grayson out and the O's down in Sarasota. But yeah, so that's been the podcast. Thank you to Chris Tyler for producing, as always. And hey, if you're hankering for some live baseball, Caribbean Series starts today on ESPN+. Andrelton Simmons and Jonathan Scope are playing for Curaçao. I learned that this morning.
Who's going to get vaccinated first? Tune in to find out.
Yeah, an ultimate challenge. I don't think that's as important for the Caribbean Series, but still important for everybody. Jake Mintz, thank you for joining me. We will talk to you next week.
Great son, Rodriguez.
SiriusXM Podcasts.